Hi, and welcome to CPR, the Checkpoint Research Podcast. The Middle East is a turbulent and explosive region, to put it mildly. The various conflicts in the area generate a constant stream of headlines almost every day, from deadly bombings to violent revolutions. This volatile geopolitical situation is reflected naturally in cybersecurity. For example, Stuxnet, widely considered the first true cyber weapon, was discovered in Iran in 2010. Shamoon, one of the most devastating cyber attacks in history, targeted Aramco, Saudi Arabia's national petroleum and natural gas company. If you're a cybersecurity researcher, the Middle East is definitely a region you should pay attention to. It's no wonder, then, that when Asil Kial, a malware analyst at Checkpoint, discovered new malware in October 2018 targeting victims in the Middle East, she was immediately curious.
I was looking for Android applications, actually, in the wild, and I came across one specific application, and what really caught my attention was actually the name of that app. The app was called, actually, the State of the Islamic Caliphate. And to me, that stood out because I wanted to know what this application offered its users, who was downloading it, why it was used, and so on.
If the name the State of the Islamic Caliphate, also known as ISIS, sends shivers down your spine, I can't blame you. The bearded jihadists are notorious for the brutal executions of their captives, which they often videoed in gruesome detail and proudly spread via social media. In recent years, ISIS has been under heavy attack and has lost most, if not all, of the territories it had occupied over the last 10 years. But its top leadership has survived, and many of its members are still actively carrying terrorist attacks against those they perceive to be the enemies of Islam. Usually, ISIS operatives are on the attacking side. This time, however, it seems they were the victims of a cyber attack.
I was interested to see what the app did, so I ran it next. And when I did, I noticed that it appeared to be changing the user's background into ISIS-related images and just changing the wallpapers, offering certain options. But then when I decided to take a deeper look into it and look at the source code of the app, I noticed that it had a malicious component and it was actually able to steal a lot of information from the victim's device. It can actually steal almost everything on the device, I want to say, starting from contacts, messages, call history, you name it, honestly, any file on the system, it can record with the phone's camera, it can take photos, it can record videos and even audio.
Malware-laced applications are nothing new, of course. Developing such an application is not too difficult, and if your coding skills are not up to par, there are plenty of open-source code snippets to be found on the web. The malware uncovered by Asil wasn't particularly advanced, but it did the job all right.
Yeah, so I started looking at it, and the code looked unique to me. Like, it didn't look like someone downloaded it from an open source somewhere. It looked like someone developed it for this purpose, the malicious component, that is. It was also very interesting to me because who would target those people? Who would target ISIS supporters? Who would go after that? I started asking myself a couple of questions, and I dug deeper into the code, and looking at unique artifacts within the app, I was also able to track other related applications to this campaign, and I kind of see a wider activity.
All in all, Asil found a total of 82 malicious applications. Most of them were clones of other legitimate applications with a malicious module added to the original code. Most were written in Arabic, Persian, and Kurdish. Asil dug deeper, and the information she found in the code led her to the command and control servers used by the malware writers to store the information stolen from the devices they'd compromised.
when we started looking into more and more samples of the apps, we, of course, started discovering more command and controls. So we had one server at first, and then afterwards we had, I think, about 10 or so. And when we decided to just go into or browse into those servers using the simple browser that we had, we, to our surprise, they all had Open Directory indexing. So we were able to see all of the files that the attackers left on the servers, and the files included stolen logs and commands that were sent to the apps for them to steal information. And that was something crazy, actually. We don't usually, as researchers, I mean, we usually look into the source of the app and the source code of the app, and we can tell what it's capable of, but we can't really know how much it stole or how much the attacker got their hands on. In this case, it was a crazy insight to me, at least. To
kind what of, kind of information did you see?
We actually saw a lot of the information that they stole from the victims. We saw text messages that the victims exchanged, call history logs, contacts, you name it. And there were hundreds of thousands of these stolen from all the victims. We were also, again, they would upload images and videos and audio that they recorded from the victims.
Going over the data she found on the command and control servers, it became apparent who were the victims targeted by the attack.
So,
how many of these victims do you think were Iranian citizens?
I would say about 30 to 40% of them, which is a lot.
This would not be the first time Iran was a target of a cyber espionage campaign. Stuxnet, which I mentioned earlier, was the first major attack directed at Iran, and certainly not the last. Both the United States and Israel, Iran's adversaries, are major cyber powers and have collaborated in the past in cyber campaigns against the Islamic Republic. But the odd thing was that effective as the malicious apps were at siphoning sensitive information from the devices they infected, the technology itself wasn't top-notch. I mean, it wasn't terribly simplistic, but knowing what we know about the technical capabilities of these two cyberpowers, one could reasonably expect their malware to have been more sophisticated than it actually was. And another thing, why would the malicious campaign target both ISIS supporters and Iranian citizens? I mean, Iran is not even an ally of ISIS. On the contrary, they're bitter enemies. The Islamic world is largely divided into two branches, Shia and Sunni. Iran is a predominantly Shia country, while the Sunni ISIS regards the Shiites as infidels. They've attacked Shia holy sites across the Middle East, killing thousands of followers. So, who would attack both Iran and ISIS? Let's have a closer look at the applications themselves and see if we can find some clues there. Some of these apps are pretty generic, with names like Google Service Updater and SuperVPN. Others are aimed at users who are from the Kurdish minority in Iran, such as a fake version of the ANF Kurdistan news agency or an app named Romantic Kurdish. Most of the apps, however, are clearly aimed at devoted Muslims. For example, apps named Benefits of Virtue and Verses from the Quran. Many of these apps have a code name in the code, Daesh, which is the Arabic and Persian name for ISIS, followed by a numeral. It's interesting to see how attackers design apps intended to appeal to the particular tastes of the average jihadist. For example, there's your run-of-the-mill Jihad in Islam app, but also an app named Temporary Marriage. What is a temporary marriage, you ask? Well, it's an Iranian practice that allows a Muslim couple to form a matrimonial contract that lasts as little as several minutes. If you're wondering why a couple would wish to marry for a short time and then end the marriage, well, as a married man myself, I can only speculate that although a long-term relationship does have its hardships and rough spots, marriage does have its more, let's say, pleasurable moments. Temporary marriage, it seems, is a clever way for devoted Muslims to enjoy those pleasurable moments minus the rough spots. We also have the wallpaper changing application that Asil first uncovered. What kind of images would an ISIS terrorist be interested in?
There were actually some funny images. There was an image of warriors that they could use. There was an image of a cake with ISIS icing on it. There was an ISIS hat or even an ISIS onesie.
A cake with an ice.
With ISIS icing.
It's like somebody having a birthday.
Exactly, yeah.
It's not something I would imagine a terrorist organization would like, but
exactly.
Who knows?
Yeah, they got creative with the content, and I guess they used it as a decoy to kind of try and track supporters of ISIS, so.
But ISIS-themed birthday cakes aside, many of the fake applications actually feel quite normal. Like, there's a sexy bikini girl app and the fake Pornhub app, an app dedicated to Hafez, a well-known Persian poet, and even some self-help apps like Key to Success and Tony Robbins Quotes. Robbins, if you're unfamiliar with the name, is a well-known life coach who wrote several successful self-improvement books. All kinds of people are interested in this stuff, no matter their religious views or ethnicity. With all the wars and violence, sometimes it's nice to remember we're all basically human. So, no clues there as to the identity of the app's creators. But digging into the malicious code itself, Asil found some clues.
They left a lot of remarks in the code. Usually developers do that to kind of track the flow of the code and help themselves in case they run into an error when the app runs so that they can fix it later on. Attackers don't usually do that, but in this case, they left the codes there. They left the remarks there, sorry. And the remarks had a lot of typos in English. So the English was very broken, and we knew that whoever is behind this is perhaps not a native English speaker. And then when we started tracking older versions of the app, we found versions back in 2016, and those apps had those debugging remarks in Persian, actually. So that could also tell us something about the possible identity of the author of these apps.
Why would a malicious code targeting Iranian citizens have debugging comments written in Persian, the primary language spoken in Iran? There were more clues to be found in the command and control servers.
Well, one of the servers actually that we found had resolved to an Iranian IP address at a certain point in time. And another server address that appeared in one of the applications had Whois information that belonged to an Iranian individual.
So, in a classic twist, rather than being the victim of this malicious campaign, Iran was actually its perpetrator. Asil, however, hastens to make it clear that for all the clues and suspicions, there is no smoking gun.
And that's not really, I mean, that's not really conclusive evidence. All of that could be fake. It doesn't really have to say that the attacker is from Iran, but it did kind of give us a direction of who that might be. And also when we looked, of course, at the distribution of the victims from the server, we were able to tell that the attack mainly focused on the Middle East region. And looking at the geopolitical targeting, perhaps, of the apps, we could also tell that the victims were a target that could be of interest to certain people.
Looking closer at the list of languages targeted by the malicious campaign, we can begin to unravel an underlying purpose. As I noted earlier, ISIS is a bitter enemy of Iran. The Iranians see ISIS as a terrorist organization, and hundreds of Iranian volunteers actually left the country in recent years to join the fight against ISIS in Iraq and Syria. ISIS is trying hard to enlist local supporters in Iran. It is obvious, then, that Iran has a clear interest to snuff out any local ISIS supporters inside its borders. The Kurds are the third largest ethnic group in Iran, comprising roughly 10% of the country's population. They mostly inhabit northern Iran, which many of them consider to be part of a greater Kurdistan. Naturally, Iran opposes the Kurds' national ambitions, much the same way that Turkey and Syria oppose the ambitions of their own Kurdish minorities. Spying on Kurdish leaders, then, seems like something Iran would be interested in as part of the regime's effort to maintain its stability in the face of growing opposition, both from the inside and outside of the country. I asked Asil how common it is to see governments in the Middle East spying on their own citizens.
Very common, actually, when especially in an area that is as fragile as the Middle East, where you have a lot of countries that have wars within them, political parties against each other, dissidents within the country itself. A lot of the times the ruler or the government would kind of go after the citizens, the reporters, the human rights activists, and kind of try to silence anyone who is against the regime, perhaps. And so I would say it is quite common to find that kind of attack.
What other campaigns have researchers around the world exposed in recent years in the Middle East area that kind of resemble this campaign?
Well, actually, nice research by Citizen Lab shows that a lot of the regimes in the area buy NSO group spyware and then use that against their own citizens to kind of spy against anyone who might be against the regime. There has also been research, for example, about NSO group spyware being used, the Pegasus being used against Khashoggi, which the Saudi reporter that eventually got killed.
So it seems we have our answer. Again, there's no smoking gun, but it does seem that Iran is behind Domestic Kitten, the name given to the malicious campaign by Checkpoint's security analysts. Kitten, by the way, is the common designation for malware attributed to Iran. Once again, we see that in the tumultuous Middle East, the lines between the victim and the aggressor can be and often are blurry at best. Maybe we should call in Tony Robbins, see if he can do something.
With so much data stored online, especially in the cloud, the way that data is assessed must be thoroughly reviewed and improved on a regular basis. Despite new regulations such as GDPR, data breaches via account takeovers still occur on almost a daily basis, and the damage they cause can easily impact whether or not an organization lives to fight another day. To learn more on how you could stay protected, visit www.checkpoint.com/products/sas-security. Thanks for listening.